Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. Today, of course, is Tuesday. That's what it means by our special theme music. It is Election Tuesday, at least Election Tuesday here on the Inside Scoop, because every Tuesday is Election Tuesday, where we discuss all the things that are making Bush and Kerry run, all the spin and counterspin and charges back and forth between the campaigns. And I've invited my very own budding Republican spinmeister, who's been on several times now, Tom Robbins. He is the state chair of Republican National Committee in Utah, actually. And I've also been going over some state numbers. And I'm beginning a new practice here on this Election Tuesday. And every Election Tuesday from now until that most important one on November 2nd, I'm going to be announcing the numbers. Because we all know, or we should know at least, after the 2000 elections, that all those poll numbers, those national poll numbers that you see ballied about in the media, they don't mean anything. We know that. Kerry's 3 points ahead in the national polls, but that's not what's important. I want to get rid of the Electoral College, but that's not what's important. What's important now is that we have this Electoral College. And Electoral College vote counts that I see as of today, as I've been interpreting the polls and I've gone over a number of them, show Kerry ahead 291 to 231, with 270 needed to elect, and 6 electoral votes that I won't give to either side yet. And I'm going to go over the different states, but the point of this first broadcast where I mention the numbers is something that the mainstream media really hasn't caught on to yet, and that is that it's Kerry's race to lose. What's interesting is that however you look at the numbers, and you can look you can give states to one state or the other, and I'll give you my state-by-state projections, which will change between now and November. But however you look at the accounts, every single news source except one predicts or puts Kerry in the lead. The only news source that does not put Kerry Lee in the lead is, can you guess it? Yep, you sure did. Fox News. Fox News puts Bush in the lead, but every single other pollster of every other news source puts Kerry in the lead. Now, some are very cautious. They don't call the states that are too close to call when it's within 5 percentage points either way. But even those states put Kerry ahead, something like 228 to Bush 197. And when you take those too close to call states, then Kerry's in a clear lead. Now, I don't mean to say by any stretch that Kerry's got this thing won. I think that he's just in a solid lead and that it is Kerry's race to lose. Bush has to do a bunch of catching up here. And I want to give you some of the state-by-state polls. And again, this is something we're going to start doing every Election Tuesday, give you the numbers. Basically, Kerry has the entire Al Gore map locked up. Now, as you recall from 2000, Al Gore had won all states except one necessary to win the electoral vote count. Of course, he'd won Florida, but he was denied Florida by the shenanigans of Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush, who illegally disenfranchised 100,000 Florida voters and didn't count another 170,000. But if you count Florida for Bush just for the sake of argument, and I will be the first to say that Florida did not go for Bush in 2000, we can see that Kerry's won all of the Gore states. Now, the Gore states without Florida back in 2000, Gore just needed one more state. Tiny New Hampshire, with its 4 electoral votes in 2000, would have made the difference in the election, even with the shenanigans in Florida, because Gore lost by some 7,000 votes, and more than 20,000 voted for Ralph Nader. If only a third of those had voted for Gore, we would have a different president today. We probably wouldn't have troops in Iraq as we speak. We'd have a very different world. But in any case, just to get you the numbers down, as I see it, the two states that were closest, at least closest going to Bush in the 2000 elections were Florida and New Hampshire, and those states are pretty solidly in the Kerry camp. New Hampshire is definitely solidly Kerry now, as I see the full numbers. And Florida is also solidly, pretty pretty close to solidly there. I've seen vote totals between 2 percentage points and 6 percentage points. Kerry clearly has a lead. Now, I know what you're thinking. You think, well, they did it once, they'll do it again. And it is true that they are going to do their best to steal the election in Florida just like they did before. They're going to try to do it using special election voting count machines and so forth. Remember, the election polls in Florida had Gore ahead going into the 2000 race, and indeed, that's why they gave the state to Florida. The Voter News Service gave the state to Gore in 2000, had him winning the state, and only changed their minds at the last moment when George Bush's first cousin, John Ellis, who worked for Fox News, called the election for Bush and turned everybody around. So what's interesting, though, even more interesting than these national polls, which show Kerry in a clear, decisive lead, if not, you know, it certainly can change, but it's his race to lose, is that you don't see that feeling among Democrats and Republicans. Most people prefer Kerry over Bush as of today, but if you ask people who they think is going to win, they say Bush. And my question for you is that because you think they're going to cheat again in Florida? Is that because you think they're going to pull an October surprise, finding Osama bin Laden? What do you think is the difference? But my electoral count today, if I had to predict the election today, would be Gore states go to Kerry, along with New Hampshire and Florida. And I think we've got decent chances in Ohio, which of course is a very big state. Even if they cheat in Florida, if we win Ohio, that's enough. And even states that were pretty good for Bush before, West Virginia, Nevada, Missouri, and to a lesser extent, even in states like Virginia, Arkansas, Arizona, and Tennessee. In fact, the only state that Gore won in 2000 that I'm a little concerned about is Wisconsin. But otherwise, I think we've got a pretty solid map. Before we get into the issues, which is what we normally talk about here on Election Tuesday, let's just talk about vote counts. Let's talk about electoral vote counts. And I want to give my guest, Tom Robbins, a chance to see if he agrees with my numbers. I suspect he won't. But one more piece of news on that front, and that is what's going on in Colorado is very important. Do you know what's going on in Colorado? Colorado is saying to – there's a referendum on the ballot in Colorado to say that, you know what, the electoral college system stinks. It really doesn't make any sense for – you know, a million voters in Florida to vote for Gore, a million to vote for Bush, and whoever wins the slight margin for all those electoral votes to go to one candidate. It doesn't make sense. So there's a referendum in Colorado to say that the votes in Colorado will be split according to the popular vote. Bush has a lead in Colorado, but it's a slight lead. And Colorado's 9 electoral votes, if this referendum passed, will actually go 5 to Bush, 4 to Kerry. It'll be the equivalent of Kerry winning New Hampshire. It's very important. We don't have to win Colorado. We just have to get that referendum passed. And so that's an important development that you probably haven't heard outside the Inside Scoop. But let me go to my guest, Tom Robbins, state chair of the College Republican National Committee in Utah. Tom, you may be proud to know that Utah, in all my state polls, was the most Republican state in the nation. It showed Bush walloping Kerry, 67% to 22%. No other state even had Bush in above 60. So here you are, a Republican from the most Republican state in the United States.
Bush, number one, Ross Perot, number two,
that's
and Bill
right.
Clinton, number three.
That's right. So Utah clearly does not reflect a majority of Americans, but it definitely reflects your political views. Tell me where you disagree with the numbers I've given you today about state-by-state counts.
Well, I think what you're talking about here is you keep on saying Kerry has a solid lead. I think that footing is obviously somewhat shaky, very shaky. Most important thing that needs to be focused in on, Terry McAuliffe said before the Democratic convention, I think after the convention we'll be up somewhere between 8 and 12 points. Obviously, when the Democrats came together and they had the entire country focused on...
Terry McAuliffe said that?
Yeah.
All right, you're going to have to email me that because I don't remember Terry McAuliffe saying
I'll get it to you, Mark.
You get that to me, but go
I
ahead.
I will. But what happens is the Democrats had the opportunity to be able to be up, be able to have their message, to be focused completely on them, and you have not seen a candidate get such a little bounce out of their convention that I don't know, you know, historically when. I mean, John Kerry came out of convention hoping that he would be able to build a solid lead, be able to have the momentum forward. He has gotten literally no bounce, no enthusiasm, basically a flat
I'll tell you why, Tom. Because Kerry was in the lead going into the convention. Can you give me an example in recent history where a challenger was in the lead going into the convention? To give 1992 as an example, Bill Clinton was some 16 points behind George Bush going into his convention. Sure, he had a big bounce, but the bounce basically put him even, and then he pulled ahead as time went on. Give me an example, if you will, of a candidate who was a challenger to the president who was in the lead going into his convention. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find one.
Well, it also, as far as what we're looking at as the just the reality of our political system right now, as far as how we're split, I think everyone's kind of looking at it. But everyone has been disappointed in Kerry's inability to get a bounce to be able to...
I don't think so. As I said, Kerry is in an unusual circumstance. Bush is such a bad president that the challenger actually had a lead going into the two conventions. I can't think of an example where that's happened in recent U.S. history. And so it's understandable that there's not much of a bounce. But I'll tell you this. And you, I think you know this, Tom, and our listeners may or may not know this, but traditionally, the undecided voters break 2-1 for the challenger. The undecided voters are generally people like Republicans, for example, who don't like George Bush but can't hold their nose to vote for a Democrat until it actually comes to Election Day. I know many, actually, Kerry Republicans. I have not yet met a George Bush Democrat, and independents are favoring Kerry as well. Can you agree with me in this?
I think you need to talk to U.S. Senator Zell Miller.
Well, Zell Miller's a Republican, as far as I'm concerned. Zell Miller's been an apostate for the last 4 years. Zell Miller endorsed George Bush and basically has been condemning the National Democratic Party for several years. Zell Miller is as Democratic as, Jim Jeffords is Republican. I mean, he's not. He's basically switched parties. And the fact that he's speaking at the Republican National Convention and, Zell Miller...
Zell Miller has a very distinguished career of public service in which he spent many years within the Democratic Party.
He didn't even
party.
Meet with the Democrats in their Senate discussions, right?
And, so, we talked about Congressman Jim Matheson refuses to show up to the Democratic
Party. Right.
Like I mentioned, and people have different ways that they break on party lines.
Right.
Zell Miller is just...
I'm talking about everyday people.
...the true in the South, which is that the message, which is pro-abortion, anti-school choice, sometimes hostile to homeschool, and also pro-gun control, just doesn't resonate. And that's why, Al Gore lost his home state of Tennessee. And
you
that's
know what? I hope, Tom, I really hope that you bring up those old tired issues, you Republicans, and that you make this a referendum on pro-choice versus pro-life. You make this a referendum on school choice, because I'll tell you this. I think that viewers know that these wedge issues, there's a solid group of people that are going to vote pro-life and a solid group of people that are going to vote pro-choice. The middle of America actually favors pro-choice over pro-life. There's some very strongly held views. If you want to run the election on that, go to it, because you're just speaking to real election will be held, I think, on the economy and the war in Iraq. And on those measures, Kerry is solidly beating Bush. I want to get to a caller. Before I do, I just want to know if you agree with me on this point. Do you agree with me that as of today, August 17th, 2004, it's Kerry's race to lose. It's a slight lead, but he is ahead. Can you agree with me on that?
Oh, obviously. If you look at the polls, okay. Kerry's ahead. Just wait until the big convention in New York, and that's when the polls will actually mean something.
Well, we'll talk about it come Labor Day, which generally is a good prediction of the election in November, but I'll tell you, I don't see how a president is going to get much in the polls. People know who George W. Bush is. No one has to learn who he is. People have made their decisions on him. They're still learning about Kerry, but I don't think he's going to get a big bounce. Let me go to a caller who's been waiting. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Ed from Riverdale, New Jersey.
Hey, Ed from New Jersey. How are you?
All right. How you doing?
What do you think about either our poll numbers or the fact that I argue that at this point it's Kerry's race to lose, and my Republican friend apparently agrees with me?
I would disagree with that. I think it's way too close to call either way. You can find, for every poll you can find that has Kerry ahead by 3 points, there's at least one notable one. Gallup poll has Bush ahead by 3 or 4 points.
Yeah, but Ed, here's my problem. I agree with you. I've seen those national polls too, and they tend to show Kerry with a slight lead ahead, 1 or 2 points. Sometimes he gets as high as 3. Sometimes it goes down to Bush as a 1 point lead, and we all know there's some 5% margin of error. The problem is, as you and I and all of America knows, but they maybe didn't know in 2000, is that this is an election decided by the Electoral College. And however you want to classify the popular vote count, it looks to me like Kerry's got a pretty solid, well, I don't want to say solid, let's just say a clear lead in the Electoral College.
Yeah, I still disagree. I think there's a couple things. First of all, you got to look at the polls to see if they're they distinguish most likely voters or not most likely voters. And even with, I don't even think you can go by historical standards there. I think there are, it's really hard for a pollster to gauge that at this point in this kind of election. I just think that the big issue is you made an assumption that independent voters generally break for the challenger.
I think they do.
Right, and that may be true historically.
Undecided independents, I should say.
Will be different. As you said, a lot of Republicans who don't like Bush are those independents. And I think that when the issue comes up about, John Kerry's overwhelming... it's funny because the Bush has been attacking him and flip-flopping on a lot of issues. I think when his 20 years legacy of consistently voting to cut intelligence funding, to cut defense spending...
Oh, come on. You have one vote from 1994.
Issue, I think that...
Well, you've got to realize,
Republicans
too, that
who don't like Bush, I think they will break for Bush.
Well, hang on, Ed, because I want to talk to you some more, but let me give Tom a chance to say some things. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, you have to realize, too, Ed, I agree with that as well. When people finally, when John Kerry actually decides, maybe I'll talk about my 20-year record, it's just going to be far too liberal, and he's voted so many times to cut intelligence. On top of that, he didn't even really attend his Senate Intelligence hearing, 73% of them.
Well, actually, it's very interesting to me that you always, you Republicans always go negative. It's exactly what John Edwards predicted.
I don't think showing up to work is negative.
Obviously, running for election, President Bush hasn't been around much. He's been out campaigning. He hasn't been in the White House much. You think the president's job would be a little more important than a senator's job?
We're talking about the three years before he's running.
The thing is
that... talking about before he was a candidate, Mark.
Let's talk about how intelligence hearings work, because I think it's important for public to understand that. There are two kinds of intelligence hearings. There are the public ones, and there are the secret ones. And everyone on the Hill, including me, because I worked on the Hill, can tell you that very little goes on in the public hearings. They have to be so careful to protect against classified information getting out to the public that very little goes on, unless there's some massive restructuring, as there hopefully will be soon in the September 11th hearings. The Senate Intelligence Committee hearings, the public ones, were basically the Bush administration told our senators and representatives less, and I know I've attended some of those public ones, less than what CNN was telling on the air. In fact, members of Congress, both Republican and Democrat, would often complain afterwards, and you can read it in the roll call on the Hill, including some private things I heard, that these were a waste of time. They weren't telling us anything, and finally then they go to the closed session. In the closed session hearings, there actually is a lot of information that does get passed on. Still, I don't think enough, but Kerry did attend the closed session meetings, and I don't blame him for saying that the public hearings were a waste of time. He can always read a transcript later.
Well, we're also talking about the public hearings while Bill Clinton was president when he served on the Senate Intelligence Committee, where he decided to miss 73% of the vote years before he ever was a presidential candidate. But we know Kerry's been plotting to be president ever since,
I don't know that that's accurate from the Clinton years, but the point still stands. The intelligence committees, when they meet in public, they say very little. And I have heard complaints from members of Congress, personal complaints, because I was there, by both Democrats and Republicans, by people saying it's a waste of time because they'll say that they'll find out on CNN more than they'll find out in those public hearings.
Ed, I have a question
for you.
Should
have got off the committee.
No. The committee does very important work in private, Ed. They do. The intelligence committees do get decent hearings in private. Some have complained that even those haven't been enough, but Kerry attended those secret hearings, and, so I just think that this whole argument, oh, he didn't attend the hearings, it's just an example of looking for some way to go negative.
I agree with you. I don't care about a lot of the personal kind of attacks. Like,
what do you
like
care
even,
about, Ed?
Even going so far as attending a meeting. But I really do think, and I'd hate that you Mark, you're going to call this negative, but go on his vote. How many times did you vote
votes are
to
fair.
Cut defense, to cut intelligence, and how many times did he actually vote to increase it? I would like to see the ratio of those votes over the past 20 years.
That's fair. I know of one vote in 1994, 10 years ago, following the Cold War, to cut $1 million from intelligence, and I know that the Republicans actually then cut more than Kerry wanted to cut at that time. That's the only one I'm aware of. I'm sure that Tom will give me a whole list. Go ahead, Tom. Tell me the other votes.
I have a question for you. As far as you being from New Jersey, that specifically in dealing with this election, Mark has always been such a strong advocate of not muzzling the voter, to making sure that they have a voice, that the people are heard, and that, you said that Kathleen Harris needs to be put in the electric chair for what she did.
I didn't quite say that. I said that I think there should be a death penalty for someone who intentionally manipulates an election, and I think that the charges should be looked into with Catherine Harris, because I think there's some evidence in that.
Being from New Jersey, do you feel, Ed, that there should be a vote to be who your next governor is, and that McGreevy should stop playing these political games and needs to resign immediately so that the people can have a choice and their voice won't be muzzled in New Jersey?
Without a doubt, I think that we should impeach. If it was possible to impeach him, if we can just motivate him to resign quick or whatever, I think it comes down to a smoking gun that he basically turned down Louis Free, turned down a very qualified person for the very important Homeland Security position. Julie had personal ties to him that. That basically, I just feel like New Jersey's national security was violated by a governor that just put it second priority to what
should you be allowed
agenda.
Let me just make my point clear on this.
On governor, or are the Democrats afraid that too many Republicans are going to come out and vote? And
well, no, actually, they seem to suggest that if John Corzine were to run, he'd win by a large margin. I think that's probably true. Let me make it clear. I do not defend Governor McGreevy. I don't see it as my position that I have to defend every Democrat. I tell it like I see it, and I think Governor McGreevy did wrong. I think he should resign. I don't mind that he's waiting till after the election, you know, 3 months to allow a transition period. I think that makes sense. But I think that, you know, to say let the voters decide, that's kind of silly. The voters did decide.
Yep.
Okay. What issue to you, national security?
Definitely.
Okay. Tell me why.
Very simply, it's someone who his, if you look at everybody in his administration, these are not people who came to it after 9/11, came to the issue of national security after 9/11. These are people.
No, of course, Dick Cheney before 9/11 was selling weapons to Saddam Hussein, oil deals with Saddam Hussein. So clearly, he came to it late.
Who was making oil deals with
Dick
Saddam?
Cheney as the CEO of Halliburton? Halliburton sold a lot of
what year
deals
was that?
Late 1990s, well into just a few years before he ran for vice president. I guess you didn't know that, huh? Take a look at that.
I didn't know that, but I'll wait till I see the detailed information.
Fair enough.
I have no problem, for instance, with covert operations such as what happened with Iran-Contra, where we were basically trying to in our national security. Basically, the way it breaks down for me is this: Democrats want to sit back and, until a crisis occurs, react to the crisis. Republicans want to constantly, proactively engage with the crisis. And I think, you know, you go all the way back to World War II. You had, you know, a very weak Republican Party who was actually isolationist at that time versus, you know, I don't think the Democratic Party has moved. I think if you look, Roosevelt was way too slow to go to World War II. And if you look at the moment of history where you know, if you look at the map.
What about Truman and containment? You don't think he was too slow there, do you? He was pretty foresighted, don't you think?
Who's that?
Harry S. Truman, who began the containment doctrine and helped form NATO and sent troops to Greece and Turkey and helped fight in Korea. You don't think he was slow to react, do you?
No, I think what happened after World War II is
the containment doctrine and helped form NATO and sent troops to Greece and Turkey and helped fight in Korea. You don't think he was slow to react, do you?
No, I think what happened after World War II is the Democratic Party, which is exactly where it was today, was more hawkish than the Republican Party, and I think they were on the right side of history. I think over time, though, and you know, when you get into the 80s and the Cold War, I think clearly you look at Dick Cheney's record in Congress, his voting record by an independent.
He voted to cut intelligence too, by the way.
You would rate him. He basically voted for every increase in spending for defense, every increase in spending for intelligence, versus John Kerry, who voted against every single one.
Kerry also wanted a nuclear freeze.
Actually, that is a good point. I will find it for next election Tuesday. I will draw up Dick's surprise to see all the times that Dick Cheney voted against increases in intelligence. And I think it's something actually that the Democrats should point out. You know, Dick Cheney was the president. It's not about the Energy Commission. My point is about the other commission, which Cheney had. It was the Counterterrorism Commission. He ran that. He was head of it. He was Bush's guy in charge of counterterrorism. Do you know how many times that commission met before September 11th?
No.
The answer is zero. Didn't get a chance to meet. They were just too busy doing other things.
How many months were they in office?
9 months. 8 months.
Okay.
That's right.
How many times did in the first 9 months of the Clinton administration did Sandy Berger or did Al Gore attend a counterterrorism or whomever he
had? I'll tell you this. With the huge amounts of intelligence going on saying in June, July, August of 2001, saying something was going to happen, something was around the corner, with details of, we had FBI people saying that we got a guy named Musawi who wants to fly planes and doesn't want to land them, that Colleen Rowley sent up the FBI, it went all the way up to CIA Director George Tenet. They had a lot of evidence.
Should Clinton be held accountable and not under them?
I don't know. And if one of you can tell me, let me know. But I don't know of any briefing that said terrorists determined to attack World Trade Center prior to 1993. I do know of a brief titled August 6, 2001, Bin Laden determined to attack targets inside the United States that labeled New York and Washington, and that's when the president went on a one-month vacation to Crawford, Texas. But I'll tell you what, while you're both thinking there, I'm going to go to a commercial break. Ed, I don't know if you want to, if you're done talking with us or you want to stay in after the break.
I'll hang on.
Okay, hang on. We're going to go to commercial break. If you want to call in and join this discussion, please feel free to do so. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I'm taking on two Republicans at once here, doing my best, but feel free to add your voice. You can also send an email by sending it to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be right back after this.
Time for another Gooberhead Award. Those in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles per hour, all of whom are nested fraud-ridden Pentagon, except when they fly that coop to feather their nest with top jobs at Lockheed, Boeing, Halliburton, and other corporations that pocket billions in bloated Pentagon contracts. The scam of such goobers is to work a while at the Pentagon, gain insider knowledge and contacts, then peddle their insider connections to corporations wanting more fat contracts from us taxpayers. Take Pete Aldridge, who has made a career of spinning in and out of the revolving door between the Pentagon and military contractors. He was Secretary of the Air Force, then, whoosh, whoosh, he left to become President of Air Force contractor McDonnell Douglas. Then, whoosh, whoosh, George W. brought him back inside to be in charge of all Pentagon purchases. Last year, whoosh, whoosh, he left again, this time to become a highly paid board member at Lockheed. But just before leaving, he personally approved a $3 billion contract for 20 jet fighters to be made by, you guessed it, Lockheed. Even while Pete's on Lockheed's payroll, Bush named him chairman of a space exploration commission. Pete's commission recently called for privatizing NASA. Guess what corporation stands to gain the most from such a move? Bingo, if you said Lockheed. About his glaring conflicts of interest, Pete simply declares that he's in compliance with current ethics laws. But of course, these laws are shams, written by lobbyists for goobers like Pete. Legal isn't the same as moral. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about this nest of goobers, call the Project on Government Oversight, 202-347-1122.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuy for SelectQuote, and I just called
Cheryl Payne,
one of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuy.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuy, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be high blood pressure, skydiving. Now, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay hundreds of dollars a year.
Well, where does SelectQuote come in?
SelectQuote's a real matchmaker. We impartially shop the pick of America's top life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a man 40 years old who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Why not let SelectQuote match you with your best buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Examples: First Colony Preferred, Best Colony, 10-year term, policy form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval, available in most states.
Gather, 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 gather
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Today is Tuesday, and every Tuesday here on the Scoop, we go into election politics. Call it Election Tuesday, and we have our special theme music, Kick Out the Republicans. The campaign is in earnest. The candidates are running all over, going to swing states. You have Kerry rallies open to the public. In fact, there was one recent in Oregon. 40,000 people attended. Kerry is structuring his speech to focus on moderate, undecided voters. And you have the Bush rallies, tightly scripted things with about 2,000 voters allowed because they have to be very loyal to Kerry. In fact, in loyal to Bush. They have to sign loyalty oaths, in fact, to even hear the Bush speech. That way Bush can keep out dissenters, much like the way his government works. Meanwhile, Bush is going around offering ambassadorships as fast as he can to people who give him a lot of money, pioneers and rangers. Clinton off of the Lincoln bedroom. Bush has one-upped Clinton, gone further, and offered ambassadorships. In fact, a study has shown that one out of every five ambassadorships were given to people who gave a lot of money to the Bush campaign, and the most recent ones were to the Bahamas and Estonia. The negative campaigning continues, even during the Olympics, which I should say is a departure from years past. Kerry's ads finish with the now required, "I'm John Kerry and I approve this message." George Bush begins his ads with, "I'm George Bush and I approve this message," presumably so that when you get the negative ad coming later, you forget, perhaps, that it was indeed Bush that approved this message. Finally, the Republican National Convention is around the corner, coming up in 2 weeks. I would be very surprised, and here's my inside scoop prediction, I would be very surprised if you don't see a huge, huge number of protesters, and compare there were virtually no protesters at the Democratic National Convention, because people really aren't mad at the Democrats right now. They are angry at Bush, the way he's ruined our economy and Iraq, and I expect hundreds of thousands of protesters in New York. You heard it here first. You will definitely see a difference. But I got two people on the phone who disagree with me. One is our guest. He's Tom Robbins. He's the chair of the College National Republican Committee, in the state chair in Utah. I've got a caller, Ed from New Jersey, and I've got callers hanging on the line. So just keep hanging on, callers. We'll get to you in just a minute. If you want to join in the discussion, all you have to do is dial 877-57-SCOOP. Ed, got to get to my other caller, so let me give you one last word. Go ahead.
Okay. You made the comment about protesters at the Republican convention. I'm just outside of New York City, and the buzz or the media around here is all about how the mayor of Boston put tight security measures in place in Boston, and he keeps telling Mike Bloomberg to do the same, and Mike Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City, keeps basically saying we're not going to do that. So I agree we're going to see probably a lot more protesters, but it's for a different reason. I think it may be for a lack of confidence on the mayor of New York City.
Well,
if he goes through with that.
Thank you for your call, Ed, and I hope you'll call back. I appreciate my conservative
listeners.
You're
a good American.
Thank you.
Luckily, I don't think we have any problem in New Jersey. Let me just respond to Ed's point real quick before I get to my next caller who's hanging on. That's been repeatedly been denied them. Central Bloomberg, democracy is more important than the grass. We can afford a little bit of receding. Democracy is much more important. I don't agree with shunning protesters off to the side. I don't agree in Boston either. I think that certainly the Boston Common would have been open, and I think you will see large amounts of protesters, not for the reason that Ed gave, but for the simple reason that a lot more people are upset by George Bush's policies. I do want to go to the phones. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Oh, yeah, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon, how are you? Your state seems to be solidly in the Kerry camp now, I should say. Very glad to hear. Doesn't mean that you should be complacent, but it's pretty good there. What's your comment?
Well, we've got a latest Washington Post ABC News poll, which has Kerry over Bush 2-1 with voters under 30.
I wonder
if Tom can give us his rationale on
that. That's a good point I was going to bring up. Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Gordon. Hey, Tom, why is it that young people who split pretty evenly between Gore and Bush in 2000 are now 2-1, and I've seen polls at least an 18-point gap. Why does most of your colleagues under 30 disagree with you, Tom?
Well, what's going to happen basically is after the Republican National Convention is when I really want to take a look at that poll. Unfortunately, the Democrats are going to not capitalize on this at all. The Republican National Committee takes its young voters very seriously, treats them with respect, and tries to mobilize them. the Democratic Party is basically spending no money, no organization, or no training.
Well, you've got a lot more corporate money than we do. There's no question about that.
It doesn't have to do with necessarily corporate money. It has to do with the structure and the respect as far as the college Republicans versus the college Democrats. College Democrats are basically treated like the, you know, just the kind of crazy kids that are running around that need to be muzzled and caged and kind of thrown in a corner where the cops are allowed to expand, allowed to do their training.
Isn't it strange then, Tom, that these college Republicans that have so much more money than the college Dems, and your party's got a lot more money than ours, I admit that with all this extra money and support from their national parties, why is it that, and I saw the same poll that Gordon from Michigan saw, why do young people under 30, 2-1, prefer Kerry over Bush? Why do you think that is?
Well, it depends on when exactly they're taking a poll. A year ago when the CNN poll came out, the AP poll came out on college campuses, George W. Bush was leading Kerry as far as George Bush's popularity.
Under 30?
Yeah, you were looking at...
Okay. Well, maybe the war in Iraq... But, you know, remember, a year ago, Bush said that mission was accomplished. We'd won the war in Iraq. Now we're still fighting the war. We're about to see our 1,000th death. Maybe young people know many people who are fighting abroad in the reserves and in the military, and they've soured on the war in Iraq. What do you think?
Well, I know people who have been mobilized in the war on terrorism. The state vice chair of the Utah Federation of College Republicans was mobilized in the war of terror. We have various members of our chapters statewide.
Can you tell me why young people have turned against, in pretty strong numbers, against Bush?
Young people come out for Bush.
So, but you don't have any reason why they're doing it now.
Because we're actually going to focus on mobilizing our young people where the Democrats don't really give legitimacy to young members.
So it's all about mobilization. It's not about any sincerely held views these young people have. Basically, they just need to be mobilized. You can convince them. Throw a few frat parties and you'll convince them.
That's not what we do, though. That's the difference between the college Republicans and the college Democrats. The college Democrats, they bring in the kegger and they bring in bands.
Okay, but Tom, you're not answering my question.
College Republicans, those training and mobilization.
Do you think these young people under 30 that prefer Kerry over Bush, and the polls show anything from 18 points to a 2-1 advantage, do you think they have sincerely held views, and if so, why? Why do they prefer Kerry over Bush?
What's going to happen is that when
you're not going to answer that, are you?
After the Republican convention, then I think it's fair to look at a poll and see exactly where they're at. They've been basically fed an MTV, you know, version, the liberal media pumping up.
Oh, it's MTV and the liberal media, huh?
There's two obvious reasons that Tom doesn't want to answer.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Please enlighten me, Gordon.
Do young people feel the economic pinch?
Yep.
And the young people are the ones that are going to have to fight and die in Iraq if George Bush gets reelected and installs a draft.
Well, as you know, Kerry just said that even knowing what he knows now, he still would have went into Iraq.
That's not what he said, and that's exactly the kind of thing that gets put out by your talking points. That's not what Kerry said. Let's talk about you know what? I'll get to that in a minute, but I don't want to get off Gordon's question. I got to respond to you, but first, let's finish on Gordon's question because I think he's absolutely right. Young people are not just concerned about the war in Iraq; they're concerned about the economy. They know that unless you have a very rich daddy like George Bush had, unless you've got rich friends or your dad's a CEO of a corporation, it's a lot harder to break into the job market than it was 10, 20, 30 years ago. Bush is cutting Pell Grants. He's cutting educational opportunities for young people. He's making it a lot harder. He's taking jobs overseas. It's a lot harder for young people today. Do you agree with me, Tom? You probably don't.
No, the unemployment rate has been lower. It's been hovering at about 5%, which is
not among young people.
But it's been a long time.
Young people have to take jobs that earn less. I mean, you have college graduates.
Young people have to earn their way. That's true. Young people have to get out there.
Why are entry? Okay,
you know, they're not going to get the head of top paying $100,000 job right out of college.
Let me ask you this, Tom. It's been shown that entry level jobs earn less as a percentage than they used to. It's been shown that George Bush's tax cut shifted the burden of taxes from the rich to the middle class. Do you think that the tax cuts have anything to do with the fact that young people are having a lot harder time finding a job than they did just 4 and 8 years ago under Bill Clinton?
Not at all. The fact is that we were attacked in our economic epicenter, New York City, by terrorists.
That's the reason?
Destroying and disrupting our economic stability and shaking our confidence. We've been able to rise from those ashes, and we continue to grow and be stronger.
You're just going to blame September 11th for everything, aren't you? Anyway, go ahead, Gordon. One last punch, and then I got to move on.
Go ahead. I said what I had to say.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Dial in, talk with me, talk with Tom, say what you have to say. I'm also getting a lot of emails from you, and that's always good. All you have to do is send it to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. or you can just comment on the blog by going to www.radioinsidescoop.com. I got a comment here from Fred that says that, Mark, I have a hard time. He says that he's looking at the rallies, 40,000 people in Portland, Oregon, 13,000 in Bowling Green, Ohio, 17,000 in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He finds it's hard to think the race is as close as the polls say. Fred says he honestly believes Bush's only chance is fraud, and Fred has signed up to work in his local polling place and made himself available as a computer professional to watch the machines. I encourage everyone else to get involved on the ground. Let me echo Fred. I don't care whether you're Republican, Democrat, or Independent. I want Americans in droves to go out on Election Day and you watch those machines. I'm going to do it. Let me tell you already, I have volunteered for Election Day. I'm going to watch the machines in Virginia, which is a state that usually goes Republican but carries right now. And I'm going to make sure that those electronic voting machines, and if they won't let me see the records, I, as a lawyer, am prepared to file suit. I am very, very concerned, Fred, that when the Republicans see that they're going to lose, they are going to attempt to do again what they did in Florida. I can tell you that Kerry has a whole host of lawyers ready for that to happen. But the electronic voting systems, which Republicans do not want a paper record for, and there's no reason that they couldn't want that except fraud, are going to be a concern. And I hope citizens everywhere across America, in every vote village or county, I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat, you have a right to go in and ensure a fair election. Contact your local registrar. Ask them what they are doing to make sure that people can't change the electronics of those voting systems. I'm going to have some more stuff on this later on as we get closer to the election. But let me just get an agreement from you, Tom, that voters should insist that the data is fraud-proof, that there are paper records. I don't care who wins. We should make sure this is a fair election. You've got to agree with me on that.
I absolutely agree with you that people need to be actively involved. They need to go to their polling places. If they want to be an election judge, what is it, usually pay something like $5 a day?
You don't get paid much. You get paid virtually nothing.
It's a free lunch. And participate in the process.
It's your civic duty.
Don't know how to plug themselves in. But let's talk, as far as young people are concerned, if the Democrats, as you're saying, are going to be beating Bush 2-1, 3-1, who knows?
Among young people.
By the time we're done, among young people, what does it matter when the college Democrats don't organize, they're not united, they don't train, aren't running a grassroots effort, and they're not going to mobilize that base, and they're going to leave those people disenfranchised?
Well, Tom, you know, you raise a good point. I haven't, I get the inside scoop from Washington. I don't so much get it from the college Democrats, but I'm going to be talking to the college Democrats. I'm going to tell them what you said. I'm going to give them a chance to respond because they know what's going on in their ranks. Maybe they'll agree with you. I don't know. But I will definitely talk with them and give them a chance to respond. I want to move on, though, after the break. During the break, I'm going to read some of your emails. But I want to move on after the break and talk about Alan Keyes. The African-American Republican who ran for president several times, lost badly, ran for senator from Maryland several times, lost badly, condemned Hillary Clinton for moving into New York to run for Senate, said it was a destruction of federalism, he would never imitate it, and he has been representing Illinois since, what, last Friday? Let's talk about Alan Keyes and, I think, a cynical attempt by Republicans to play the race card. Tom will probably disagree, but, hey, that's what Election Tuesday is all about. We're going to talk about Alan Keyes, and also we'll talk a little bit about the hurricane in Florida and how I think that may affect the election, and finally bring up the movement of troops in Korea. Oh, and I got to respond to Tom's point, a negative point he made about Kerry. So we've got a lot coming up in the next 15 minutes. Still, you can join in. Just dial 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We got 15 minutes left, but don't let that stop you from calling. We'll be right back.
It's a good thing that Saddam was captured, hiding in a hole just like Iraq would. Now they're saying that the war went on because their intelligence was wrong. Was the reason for war based on lies and corruption? Where are the weapons of mass destruction?
The Timken Company, based in Canton, Ohio, makes steel and other industrial products, and last year, it was the proud recipient of a visit by His Eminence, George W. Bush. The Prez had traveled to a height that's up for grabs in this fall's election. Ray Canton to claim that those giveaways would trickle down class America, and he needed a good visual for his televised speech. Temkin's factory was the perfect made-for-TV backdrop. A crowd of Temkin's hard-hatted blue-collar workers was dutifully assembled for Bush. The boss man, Tim Temkin himself, was on stage beaming with pride and nodding in approval at George's every sentence. Why wouldn't he? Tim has long been a major financial backer of both Bush presidents. Now, fast forward to May of this year. Just months after George's highly publicized rooster strut in Canton, Tim announced that he was closing three of his U.S. factories, eliminating 1,300 jobs, and moving production to low-wage centers elsewhere, including overseas. Curiously, there was no national media coverage of this development, which made a mockery of Bush's earlier political posturing. What's to happen to the workers who were made to serve as props for George's pitch about the power of trickle-down economics? I have no idea what I'm going to do, says Scott Anderson, 41 years old and a 23-year loyal worker at Temkin. There are just no good job opportunities left in this community. Scott added that he now couldn't pay for the college education of his kids. I want a better America, as my parents did for me, he says. Ironically, a Temkin spokesman coldly replied, it's a business issue, not a political issue. This is Jim Hightower saying he's dead wrong about that. By stiffing America's middle class, Bush and Tim Temkin are playing with political dynamite.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill six eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Gotta get out the vote and even the score. When the GOP is leaving, I hope that they don't hit their heads on the door.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Today is Tuesday, meaning it's Election Tuesday here on the Scoop, and I've got the budding Republican spinmeister here, Tom Robbins, state chair of the Utah College National Republicans. He's been on several Election Tuesdays to butt heads with me on issues on the election, and of course, you're always welcome to join in. We've had a Bush supporter and a Kerry supporter so far call in. All you have to do is dial 877-57 comment at radioinsidescoop.com, or just go ahead and add to the blog on the website, as so many of you have done. And I'm going to read some of those comments in a minute, but first, I did raise the issue of Alan Keyes. Alan Keyes is the black Republican from Maryland who suddenly moved to Illinois because the Republicans in the land of Lincoln couldn't find a black person to run against Barack Obama. So because there are so few black Republicans, they actually had to reach out of state to play the race card. My question, Tom Robbins, to you is there any doubt in your mind, I want to see you say this with a straight face, because I don't think you can, is there any doubt in your mind that Alan Keyes was chosen to run against Barack Obama because he's black?
Well, Alan Keyes is running against Obama because he said yes.
Yeah, but why did they ask, Alan Keyes, why did they, because he's black?
Well, Alan Keyes is running against Obama because he said yes.
Yeah, but why did they ask? Why did they ask Alan Keyes? Why did they ask this guy? Keyes happens to be black. Is that just coincidence?
They asked many people. And
really? Who else did they ask? We know that Jerry Ryan, Jack Ryan, who was going to run against Obama, had a sex scandal. He had to get out because he was taking his wife to sex clubs.
That would matter to you, Mark, obviously.
Well, actually, it wouldn't have. I think it's sex clubs, that's kind of public.
He got lynched by the same media who said that we should be leaving Bill Clinton alone.
Yeah, but answer my question here. Is there any, just admit it, because I think we all know it's true, and I think the public would appreciate
a very interesting debate. Interesting enough.
I know, but don't you think the public would appreciate just your telling the truth here, Tom? Do you have any doubt in your mind that they chose Alan Keyes because he's black? I mean, the Republicans talk about they're against affirmative action. They don't want to play the race card. Do you really think they went out to Maryland and just randomly picked Alan Keyes? Or do you think he was chosen because...
The fact that he is African-American, he likes to be kind of in front. He's not afraid of debate. It doesn't matter when the cameras are on. He finally said yes, and he would do it. You need somebody who has the ability to raise money.
I think he's a bit of a joker, frankly. I think he's a joke, and I think the Republicans chose him because they knew they were going to lose in a landslide to Barack Obama. They couldn't find any other Republican willing to give up a safe congressional seat in order to be sitting fodder for someone who I think is going to be not only a great senator but a good presidential candidate someday. No Illinois Republican would step up to the plate, so the Republicans said, look, we've got someone who's going to lose big time, and it'd be nice to show that there are black Republicans out there. We can't find any in Illinois. We'll pick this crazy man who ran for president, who's known for spouting off and flying into mosh pits. We'll put him there to show that we have black Republicans too, when, you know, he's a sitting duck. They won't choose a black Republican who has a chance of winning.
Said, let's find a black person. They went through a huge list of people.
Really?
And finally,
who else? Who else were they considering?
Alan Keyes said yes.
Who else were they considering?
They talked to many of the Illinois state senators who denied it. They talked to Oberweis, who had been the primary challenger to Jack.
Why didn't he run?
In the Republican primary.
Why didn't he run?
Mark, I'm not going to get up here and say that Alan Keyes is going to win, because quite frankly, it's a long shot.
No, he's not going to win. My point is not that he's, you know, a laughing stock. My point is that they chose him because he's black, and that all the Republicans who accuse Democrats of playing the race card should recognize that's what they did here. I want to move on, though. Just briefly, and we don't have much time left, Ed said that he supported Republicans, and this dictator has weapons of mass destruction. In fact, they're not chemical or biological weapons, those that frankly do much less damage. They are nuclear weapons. This dictator has taken his country out of a treaty to basically not promote nuclear weapons. He's developed nuclear weapons under Bush's watch, and Bush today, or just a couple days ago, decides to reward him by removing American troops that were on his border. That dictator, of course, is not Saddam Hussein. It's Kim Jong-il of North Korea. Tom, you don't support
the amount of people that North Korea has. I think they would be able to overwhelm our forces pretty easily. I'm not sure. I'm not a military expert. You'd have to put, I don't know what it would be, a half a million or a million troops there.
Well, call me a hawk. Call me crazy. Call me a right-wing.
I'll call you crazy.
No, that's okay. Call me a right-wing Democrat, but I actually advocated on this program a year ago giving tactical nuclear weapons to South Korea and a way to get an exchange where we remove ours and they remove theirs in North Korea. That's a pretty hawkish idea. I certainly don't see Bush going that far, but it seems to me that North Korea, which has missiles, nuclear missiles that can hit L.A., a dictator, by the way, who killed far more of his own citizens than Saddam Hussein did, not to justify anything Saddam Hussein did, that he's far more of a threat than Iraq ever was, and yet this guy, Bush, is rewarding. And I have to say, I think the reason is because there's no oil in North Korea. What do you think the reason is?
Basically, just like I was saying, it's an idea of modern warfare, what exactly where you're going to deploy your troops. The whole deployment of the troops and how that's going to go over the next 10 years also involves how we're going to deal with the massive amounts of troops that we have in Germany and other areas, which because of the fall of the Cold War.
And I don't dispute those, but why don't we go, if the purpose, I'm not sure what the purpose in Iraq was. We keep changing it. Was it to promote democracy? Was it weapons of mass destruction? I'm not sure what it was, but if the reason was to get rid of a vicious dictator who kills his own people and has weapons of mass destruction, why aren't we invading North Korea? Why didn't we?
If we did that would be Armageddon. You have to fight the battles you know you can win.
Well, North Korea didn't have nuclear weapons.
North Korea, I mean, you can say that on your show, and you can be pro going into North Korea, guns a-blazing, but
No, my view is that we've got to take a much tougher stance on North Korea. We've got to go and get very...
Should we invade them like you're saying that maybe we should?
Here's my view on North Korea, and I say this a year ago. I say this before North Korea, by the way, got the nuclear weapons. I'm not sure they're ready yet, but here's my view. Call me a hawk. Maybe all my Democratic members listening to me will leave me. Here's my plan for North Korea. It's just my own. I'm not saying it's Kerry's or anybody else's. My plan is you secretly put in tactical nuclear weapons in South Korea. Once they're ready and actionable, you announce them to the world and you say, we will remove ours if you remove yours and have a nuclear-free Korea. If they refuse, I would do what Israel did to the Al-Sarq nuclear plant in Iraq. I would bomb the Yongbyon nuclear plant where they're developing the nuclear weapons in North Korea. Wouldn't do a full-scale invasion, but I would take out their nuclear capability to protect us all. I think that, actually, if you've got a nuclear-armed power that you can take out that's dangerous, I have no problem with doing that. The problem in Iraq was it just simply wasn't the case. So did that hawkish view surprise you?
Yeah, it surprised me a lot.
Okay.
It's something I would definitely be looking into. And
maybe you'll vote for me, Tom, when I run for office. If you just didn't disagree with me and everything else. Hey, Tom, I do want to quickly get to some of the things I've had on my blog. Nathan, another conservative who listens into the show, and I welcome my conservative listeners. I really do. I'm very glad to have you on the show because I think debate is what makes America great. Nathan writes, Mark, I'm very surprised about your talking about the referendum in Colorado. Don't you consider that a dirty political trick? If the Republicans were to get that passed in California, New York, and nowhere else, would you call that a dirty political trick? I'm not a proponent of the electoral system now. I'd rather see a straight popular vote. But let's be fair and change the rules everywhere at once instead of doing it only where it helps certain people. Nathan, you have a good point. You have a good point. I do think if it happened in California or New York or Texas, frankly, to give you a Republican state, that would be more unfair. There is a state right now, and I probably should have mentioned this before, one of the 50 states does apportion their delegates, their electoral votes, according to the vote count. That state is Maine. Maine has two congressional districts, and they give, of their four electoral votes, they give two to the winner of each electoral district. The thing about the electoral vote is it is decided on a state-by-state matter. That's according to the Constitution. There is no way to do it everywhere at once. I agree with you, Nathan. It should be done everywhere at once. I would advocate that. But I think if you take a state like Maine, which is slightly pro-Kerry, but not overwhelmingly pro-Kerry, and you take a state like Colorado, which is slightly pro-Bush, then they can set the precedent for the other states. But I agree with you, Nathan. It should be done nationwide. I do think that Colorado is a first step. Tom, you got one...
One felt swoop.
Yeah, it's very hard to do that,
saying
unfortunately.
Saying that Kerry's on solid footing, I think it's quicksand after the Republican National Convention with George W. Bush and the message that we're going to put forth. You're going to see the polls move. It's going to be a tight race all the way down to the finish. But in the end, the Republicans are going to be victorious because George W. Bush has done the thing. And I guess in the end, Mark, I would hope that because you're so pro-democracy and you love voting so much, that you would call on the governor of New Jersey to resign immediately, to hold elections, so the people of New Jersey have a voice and they have a choice and that their voice isn't muzzled.
Well, Tom, I want to thank you very much for appearing on the show. The people of New Jersey had a voice. They elected Jim McGreevy, and so a resignation is not at all the same as holding a fair election. I've just got a few seconds left. I want to tell you folks about the show tomorrow. We're going to do an update on the war on terror. I know you think you've heard everything there is to hear about it, but what you may not know, George Bush, or at least his administration, has leaked the name of a guy working for us in the Al-Qaeda network. That's right. Worse than Valerie Plame, they have leaked the name of a spy helping us, ostensibly for political reasons, and it has ruined, really harmed our effort to hurt Al-Qaeda. It looks like the Bush administration is putting politics ahead of the war on terror, and we're going to be talking about that all tomorrow. On the War on Terror, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, this is Mark Levine signing off and telling you to get out there and help promote democracy.
Deception. The GOP stole